to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Aye.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, that passes. Okay, do I hear a motion for the approval of the consent agenda? Before we do that, I want everybody to notice 3.5, set public hearing on the 2014 through 2019 capital facility plan for November 11th, 2013. I just wanted to mention that, so it'll be coming up at us. So I'd hear a motion for the approval of the consent agenda. Okay, can you
second?
Mark Snyder, seconded. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, if council doesn't mind, we're going to do 4.1 and then we're going to go to 4.6. Terry's not feeling very good, so we're going to move him up to be, so he can do both of his right away. He took a little tumble off a cliff, so he's not feeling real good. Okay, 4.1, water tower presentation. Terry.
Good evening, Council, Mayor. We've got a little informational study tonight, or slideshow tonight, to give to you. It's a presentation by Utility Services. They do water tower inspections. They do a full service on them. Tonight we have John Snodgrass and John Kitchen here to run through the program and their PowerPoint presentation. The last time that a study was done on the water towers was around 2005, 2006. There's a few things that were mentioned in there that hadn't been done that should be done and need to be done this time. But you'll show the slideshow tonight and some presentations here, and you'll see kind of where our water towers lie and what they found, what needs to be corrected. So at this time, I turn the rest of the presentation over to them.
Welcome.
All right, thank you, Terry. First of all, thank you, Council and Mayor, for your time this evening. We really appreciate it. My name is John Kitchen. I work for Utility Service. I've worked here for about 2.5 years. I live in Brush Prairie, Washington. Some of you may know where that's at. Some may not, but it's kind of over by Vancouver, so it's the rainy side of the mountain. I like coming over here to get my sunshine. It feels good for me. So thanks for letting me come over here. I've spent a lot of time on your water towers. In fact, I've even had the police come out to visit me once, so I've spent some time up there and got to know some people in the city from that. I'm going to do part of the presentation. Also, John Snodgrass is going to do part of it. John Snodgrass is from Omaha, so we traveled out here to be here tonight. He's our regional sales manager, and he's been with the company for, I guess, 10 years, been quite a while, and got a lot of experience with our company and what we do. So the layout for our presentation, first of all, I'm going to introduce Utility Service, kind of give you an overview of what our company is, what we do. We'll then look at pictures of each one of your tanks and some of the things that we think that it needs. And then I'll have John come up, and he's going to discuss our full service maintenance program, which is kind of a different approach to tank maintenance, kind of how we manage the assets. We'll jump into this. Utility Service was founded in 1963, so we've been in business for over 50 years. We've been working in Washington here for about 2.5 years. If you look at the map and kind of how things expand, growing from Perry, Georgia, that's where the company was founded. They kind of been growing ever since then, and getting to Washington is about as far away as you can get from Ferry, Georgia. But it's a growing company. They started in tank maintenance as a tank painting contractor, and they developed into the largest contractor for tank maintenance in the country. So we maintain a lot of tanks, reservoirs across the U.S. We have over 750 employees. This is including people like myself, water systems consultants, out looking at water tanks and water systems, helping them provide solutions to their common issues, as well as many service crews, production offices, managers, obviously a full office staff back in Georgia as well. 53 water system consultants. We cover 85% of the U.S. The other 15%, there's not enough people there to justify having somebody there for our company, so we cover most of the U.S. We have 10 production offices nationwide. These production offices are where we get all our work from, all of our crews work out of, and then they come out and maintain the water tanks across the country. In 2012, we did over 1,400 complete renovations. About 200 of those were lead abatement projects. So if you've ever seen a large painting project or industrial project, if there's lead on a project, they have to do a full containment around it and basically control the lead. So we do a lot of experience painting tanks and being around tanks. Over 5,000 inspections on tanks. So 5,000 tanks are on our full service program, 8,000 inspections. We have 5,000 tanks across the country that our company is solely responsible for. So a tank belongs to the city, municipality, but utility service is liable for the tank, the condition of the tank, the long-term maintenance of the tank. So a lot of cities are doing maintenance the way that our company is offering it. So the maintenance program, essentially what the maintenance program is in a nutshell, and John's going to get in more detail, but from a high level, what the maintenance program is from 1963, when our company was founded, until 1985. We were working with municipalities and water systems across the country, and we were basically doing all the work for them. We were doing all their inspections. We were monitoring their vents. We were looking at their safety plans. We were doing all their coatings inside and out. We were doing all the work on them. And finally, around 1985, the cities kind of came to us and said, hey, you guys do all this work. What if we just contract with you to do all of the work instead of each individual project? And so in exchange, we'll pay you a yearly fee. Utility service becomes responsible for the assets. So again, the inspections on the reservoirs, all the OSHA compliance, Department of Health compliance, safety, security, all those things. So that's kind of what the maintenance program is at a high level, which John will get into more details as well. I mentioned already there's 5,000 tanks currently maintained this way. In each tank that's on the program, we look at five categories, and these are the categories that fall under the AWWA, which is the American Water Works Association. The guidelines they set that should be looked at every year under water tanks. So we're looking at the sanitary conditions, structural conditions, safety, the security, and the coating system. So really the five aspects of inspection of every water tank. And when I went and looked at your guys' tanks, that's exactly what I looked at, was those five categories and looked for areas where I thought the improvements could be made. I should note that we looked at the tanks about a year and a half ago, and since then we did do some modifications on the reservoirs. I have some pictures of that as well. I say reservoirs, tanks. I don't know what you guys call them exactly. A lot of people in my company call them tanks. Everybody in Washington calls them reservoirs. So I use the two words interchangeably. So if I say tanks or reservoirs, it's just a little mix that's going on in my head, I guess. I don't know what you guys want me to call them, but I use the words interchangeably. So with our company and all the work we do on tanks, you can imagine there's some economies of scale that we bring to the table with that. Tenemic Paint, they provide a lot of the industrial coatings for all the tanks across the country. We are Tenemic Paint's largest purchaser of paint. In fact, we purchase more paint than the next nine people beneath us. I don't say that to brag. I just want to make sure everybody understands that when it comes to painting tanks, Utility Service is the largest provider of tank maintenance and tank painting in the country. We do more than any engineering firm does, really anybody in the country does. We make a lot of our own vents for the tanks. We have our own trucks for sandblast, abrasive material for blasting if we need to. A lot of our own equipment, trucks, welders, all kinds of stuff you need for maintaining a water tank. We have all that equipment. We have over 100 crews at our disposal. So what that kind of means to the city is every part of the country has different times of the year that we can paint tanks and where they have high water usage and what they can and can't do. And so what we have the ability to do is pull from all these crews to move across the country whenever we need to do a project based on when it fits into your city's needs. So, you know, you guys have a lot of agriculture, a lot of heat in the summertime, which isn't a good time to paint. When we come into winter and it gets cold, it's not a good time to paint. So there's a small window of painting, you know, early spring, late fall, that we can do painting projects. So we have crews that can schedule and get that work done for you. So then we'll jump into each one of the reservoirs. I didn't put all the pictures in. I took probably 100 pictures of each one. I kind of picked out certain things on each reservoir just to point out to you. This, of course, is the red and white tank, 2 million gallon standpipe. You know, from a distance, I drove in the city and I see this, and it looks like a beautiful tank. The stripes on it, I like it. The logo looks pretty good from a distance. When you get it close to the logo, you can see that what they do on the red colors, they put a clear coat on those. So clear coat basically keeps the red vibrant, makes it look nice. But there are some areas where that clear coat is starting to break down, and you're starting to see that the logo, when you get closer to it, is starting to deteriorate and not be quite as bright and vibrant as it once was. In addition to the side of the tank, I think Dan has mentioned that this is maybe the local kids driving by, shooting paintballs at it. I don't know. But most tanks I see that are around town, people like throwing rocks at them, shooting paintballs at them, things like that. And so around the bottom of the tank, there's little dings, little dents through the coating system. Areas where things have been thrown and shot at it with paintball guns, apparently. But overall, the exterior condition is in pretty good shape on this reservoir. It was built in, I want to say it was, look this morning, I want to say 97, was that right, 05? I don't know. But the coating on this one is starting to deteriorate, but looks better than the three that you have. This is the best one of the three. One of the OSHA concerns that I have when I looked at this is there's only one bolted manway, so when it comes to renovating a tank, if the crew gets inside there, they blast the coating out. It has to be ingress and egress, and so we recommend adding a secondary manway to be compliant with an OSHA standards for a confined space. In addition, on the top of this tank, you see it's got a rolling ladder. It's pretty standard to see rolling ladders. The thing is, if you look at a rolling ladder, they're only attached around the vent, so it becomes a security and a safety issue. Safety issues really what it comes down to. And so anytime we see a rolling ladder, we recommend taking those wheels off and actually welding that ladder directly to the top of the tank so that you don't have that safety concern when you're climbing. I climb a lot of tanks, and so when I see rolling ladders, I'm always looking at the vents, making sure that whatever's holding that around the vent is secure. And a lot of them you can't see extremely well. This one you can see at the top where my pointer doesn't work here, but so this is where you climb up, and then you kind of step over to get onto this ladder. You can pretty well see the vents, but sometimes it's tough. So I always look at those rolling ladders as a safety concern. So we do recommend welding that to the top of the tank. This is the inside of this reservoir. Again, the coating system, I think it's about 10 to 12 years old, starting to show signs of deterioration. You can see some flash rusting coming through where the coating is getting thin, and you're starting to see rust. Now, the upper portion of these reservoirs or tanks, it's a very corrosive environment. You obviously have chlorine in there. You have a lot of water vapor in the summertime. We have a lot of heat around here, so the water vapor comes up. And it's an area that's very corrosive. So keeping the coating on the inside of a tank is very important, especially in the upper parts where we see the most corrosion. So the inside of this one, you know, it's definitely showing signs of its life, and it's about due for a coating job on the inside. And we move on to the Lions Park tank, the 1 million gallon tank. This one we have done some modifications on already. Again, it was about a year ago, actually, we were out here. It was snowing, and I felt bad for the crew. They're from California. They came up here and had to work, and it froze pretty good, but they toughed it out. So again, on this reservoir, there's only one bolted manway. So again, same as the other one, we recommend adding a secondary manway for OSHA compliance. The exterior coating on this tank is older than the other two we looked at. I think it's pushing 15 years. And I'm just showing there's some chalking which is taking place. And what the chalking is that coating breaks down. Usually there's three coats of paint on a tank, a primer coat, an epoxy coat, and then a urethane. When that top coat of urethane breaks down, you'll see the epoxy breaks down rapidly. And that's what we're looking at here is the chalking of that paint, which is showing the top coat has broke down. It's going to continue chalking. The good thing is on all three of your tanks, but this one here as well, is that the adhesion of the coating is still good. And so what that essentially means, I talked about blasting a tank earlier and lead containments, and we do that, you know, a lot across the country. The problem, anytime you have to blast the coating on a water tank or anything, it gets very expensive to contain that, the debris that comes off the tank and ventilation and everything else. And so what we want to do with a water tank, or any project essentially, is we're going to want to power wash it and get a new coat of paint on it before the current coating falls off. It starts to delaminate and fall apart. And so when I did all of these inspections, I looked for that. I checked the adhesion to make sure it's still good. And all three of them, fortunately, are in good enough shape. We can power wash and put another coat on the outside, which saves the city a lot of money. This is the best picture I had of the setup here. What I'm showing is, next picture we'll show, but this is the old setup. This was the safety anti-climb device, if you will, to try to keep people off the tank. And it also had a old, outdated climbing safety climb on it for the ladder. It was a system that's outdated. A lot of the harnesses you wear to climb the tank have been recalled. And so we actually did some updates on this reservoir, like I said, about a year ago. We put a new ladder gate on there, so essentially it keeps people from climbing it. Without an extremely tall ladder, they can't get on there. It obviously keeps the wind won't knock this off, I guess. The other thing, you can't see it here, but there's a, switch back and forth. We updated the safety climb. This now has a cable on it, so again, it's just an updated safety climb that we use. This is a better picture of a rolling ladder at the top. The only thing that holds this rolling ladder on here is the bolt that goes right through here. And again, I can't see this bolt when you climb a reservoir, so this becomes a big safety concern for anybody climbing a water tank, is how well is that ladder attached. So a lot of times before you get on them, you grab them, you shake them, you say, okay, is this going to be safe or not? And then you climb up there. And so, again, we recommended welding that down. And on the vent here, you can see the vent had been kind of punched out. It just wore out, rusts out, and there was access into the tank. And so what we did is recommend putting a new vent on this as well. Here's a better picture of the vent screen. Obviously, it had been the screen it had wore out and got pushed in. So we came and we put a new style vent on this, and now we attached the ladder. So you can see here now the ladder secured down, and we put a new vent on. The other nice thing about this vent, in comparison for safety reasons, is a vent like this, you can get penetration from rainwater, other debris in the side. If somebody climbs the tank, they can potentially put something into a tank. With the new style vents that we have, and your other tanks already have these, there's two different screens on them. One that's just like the one that's on there, and the mushroom cap comes around, and there's another screen on the bottom. So nobody can get into your tank. It's more of a secure style vent that keeps rainwater out and other things as well. So two updates that we made to the tank. This is the inside of the tank. This is an old coating system. I assume it was when the tank was built. It's called coal tar. And essentially, it's a tar interior. It's a good coating. It lasts a long time. However, it's no longer used. It's no longer recommended for the inside of water tanks or approved for the inside of water tanks. And when these coatings fail, they don't fail like the other one you saw. They make more of a pinhole rusting. So you'll see little bits of corrosion come through the coatings on these, but it's not going to be like a big sheet of rust or a big hole. You're just going to see little bits. But what's happening is the water is behind the coating system and actually eating at the sidewall where you have a lot of corrosion taking place. And you can see the top of the picture as well. You can see some of the coating starting to chip and fall off into the tank as well. There's a couple of pictures here of that. And this is the pinhole rusting I was talking about. You can see that this coating is extremely thin. This is the bare metal on the inside of that tank that's starting to rust and corrode and create issues. So we want to get this coating sandblasted off, get it back down to bare metal, and put a new coat of epoxy paint on the inside. So the third tank, the 3 million gallon Lyons Park tank, I've climbed this one three times now. In fact, I was up on it, I think it was 2 weeks ago. We put a temperature probe in there to look for temperature stratification on the inside of the reservoirs. One thing we do, besides just painting the tanks, is we work with water quality. And part of water quality, anytime you have a large body of water, you're going to have different layers of stratification inside there. You guys get a lot of sun, a lot of solar gain in the summertime, which creates the water, the warm water will rise to the top. And this tank, the inlet does come up and it kind of blows the water in, but the water that comes in is cold. And just like a cup of coffee, when you dump creamer in, that cold water goes to the bottom and that's what's taken into the system, and the warm water stays on top. And so all three of the reservoirs, we recommend putting in a mixing system, which are recommendations we have as well, is what we call a PAX mixer. It's an active mixer, kind of like a boat propeller. It sits in there and churns and just keeps that water constantly moving around and homogeneous from top to bottom to get rid of those stratified layers. So moving along, the exterior of this tank, again, just like the other ones, there's little areas where kids throw rocks at them, little blemishes on the exterior, but there's no big major areas where there's a lot of corrosion taking place. The coating on this, again, is chalking like the other ones. It's time to start thinking about putting a new coat of paint on the outside of this one as well. This is a picture of the safety climb. It's a better picture. It's the same one that was on the 1 million gallon. This is the old pipe style safety climb. We replaced the safety climb on this one as well. We put a cable climb on there to be updated, but it was one of the original recommendations was to do that. The top of the tank, again, from a distance, you can't really see this. When I got up on top of this one, obviously it jumped out at me. There's a bunch of snow on it when I climbed this. But you can see where the top coat of this tank is delaminated, excuse me, and it started to delaminate and come off. So you can see the secondary coat that's inside there. You're seeing some of this on the sidewall lower as well, so you're seeing some delamination on this tank. And again, delamination, if it gets bad enough, you have to blast the tank with sandblast and containment, so it's very expensive. So this kind of stuff we want to contain early on before it gets too expensive. You can see your vent on this one. The vent's in good shape on this. It's got the same style vent we put on the 1 million gallon tank. The inside, we talk about delamination. That's exactly what's going on in this tank as well. You can see that the top coating on this is falling off. In fact, inside the tank, you can see where some of those sheets have fallen into the water, and you have some of that paint that's in the water and been pulled into the distribution system. So we're seeing this throughout the entire inside of the tank. This was taken February 2012. It's gotten a little bit worse. I was up there 2 weeks ago, and I can see some of the old pictures versus the new pictures where we're seeing more delamination. So again, the inside of this tank needs to be sandblasted down to bare metal and recoated with another coat of paint. So we talk about mixing systems and keeping water homogeneous. This is the first tank I've been in. I guess maybe it was the only one from cold enough that I've climbed. But this tank actually had a layer of ice along the entire top of the tank. And so talking about stratification, we know that in the wintertime here, it's cold enough to get the water cold enough on the top, and we have a layer of ice on the top of it. The 1 million gallon did not have a layer of ice, but the mixing system I talk about will also keep the ice from forming, because that warmer water comes in, it'll stir that up at the top and keep that tank churning and keep the ice from forming on the top of the reservoir. The concern with ice, of course, it damages the coating. It's got sharp edges. It goes up and down. On a super cold winter, you can get thick layers of ice. It gets caught on ladders. It gets caught on a balcony you stand on when you crawl in there. It's about 10 feet down. That balcony could get ice on it. It could rip it off. It can do a lot of damage to a tank if you get a large buildup of ice inside there. So preventing ice is an important thing to do to save the city money. Okay, so that concludes the utility services, the condition of the tanks. Does anybody have any questions on any of that before I turn it over to John Sondres?
So on the smaller tank at Lyons, you want to take off the whole interior of that, huh? That black stuff, whatever you call it.
The tar interior, yeah.
Tar, oh, okay.
Yeah. Anytime we do an interior of a tank, we blast it down to bare metal and we recoat the interior. The nice thing about the inside of a tank is, of course, it's a contained area already, so there's no containment. Putting a fresh coat of paint on there from bare metal is going to adhere better and last longer than adding a secondary coat.
So the cost we have here includes the other man doors on the tanks and all that type of stuff, I think?
Correct. Yeah, it includes all the modifications I talked about. Any other questions? Okay, I'll turn it over to John. He's going to talk about the maintenance program and how it works for you guys.
Thank you, everybody. John Snodgrass with Utility Service. One of the things I did want to go back and address is on that coal tar epoxy. Back in the 60s, they had paint that they put inside of a water tank, but it was an old five-coat vinyl system. So they had five different coats of paint that they put on the inside. And so what they did was then back in the early 70s, they came out with a new technology, and it was called coal tar epoxy. So back in the early 1970s, they really started to put this black coating system on the inside of the tank. And the benefit of it was is that you could put one or two coats in there, as opposed to having to put five coats of paint, which when you go to do the cost of renovating a tank, the cost of labor is the lion's share of what it costs to do the renovation. So they were able to go from doing that five coat to the two coat. Well, then a number of years later, when see that on the other two tanks that you have. And so this coal tar epoxy, it lasted a long time. It's not recognized anymore by American Water Works Association. And so when we start to see areas, really when I see it just about anywhere, we see a lot of it down in California, Oregon, Washington, really out here on the West Coast is about the only place that we see it anymore. You get about anywhere else in the country, it's all been removed. And so, and part of the reason is even though you guys do get some cold temperatures and I see the ice that's inside of your tanks, me being from Nebraska, boy, I've seen some real ice inside of tanks that you can stand on. And as a result of what John's talking about with the ice, a lot of that's been removed. But it is something that, again, just needs to come out, and you can see where it's not protecting the steel, too. So that was kind of the one of the reasons why we made that recommendation. But really what I guess, you know, in summary of what John talked about as far as the condition of your tanks, we're not really seeing anything on your tanks that we haven't seen on hundreds of other tanks. We look at them almost every day. We're climbing a tank, we're looking at it, we're assessing the condition. And we're all in different parts of the service life of the coating system. And so really what we want to do is that we want to identify kind of where those things are, and we want to make sure that we take care of them, not only from a coating system standpoint, but from a structural safety, sanitary, and security standpoint. When we start looking at structural concerns of the tank, when we start looking at steel loss on the tank, once you start to lose that steel, there's no getting it back. You can do weld repair, you can cut different plates and put new steel in there, but it gets very, very expensive. And so really what we want to try to do is be able to look at these things, inspect them on a regular basis, and then have a system put in place so that we can be really change from being a reactive type of maintenance to a proactive type of maintenance. And if we can do that, then these water towers will literally last forever. The only thing that ever shortens service life of a steel water storage tank is steel loss. And if we can guarantee that we're not going to have any steel loss, these things will, we can come back and look at them again in 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. They're going to be in the same condition that they will be after we renovate the tanks on this initial renovation. So really, you know, when we get into that point, you know, then from a life cycle cost analysis, you save yourself a lot of money, you save yourself a lot of headaches, and you have a sustainable solution to be able to provide water to your community for generations. So the way that we really have found to do this is, as John said, in 1985, we worked with an awful lot of different communities around the South and the Midwest, and one of the things we wanted to do is try to be able to, again, shift from that reactive to proactive type of maintenance. And so we got into where we started to do a full service asset management program. So what I want to do now is, now that we've assessed the condition of the tanks, I want to show you kind of what that asset management system looks like. So if you're going to maintain your tank, well, there's a couple different ways you can do it. But American Water Works has given us a couple different quotes. And it just says that a good comprehensive preventative maintenance program can extend the life of an existing tank indefinitely. So again, it can last forever. I won't really go into the GASB 34 compliance, but really what GASB is just more or less, GASB 34 compliance is the way you depreciate assets. In this asset management program, we will guarantee zero steel loss on the tanks. And if we can do that, we don't have to depreciate out those assets, because again, it'll last indefinitely. And so we have a lot of different documentation that we provide to be able to prove that to the federal government, and that's all included in the program. This is the only asset management program in the United States that's GASB 34 compliant. One of the other quotes is that many thousands of dollars can be saved and complaints from citizens can be eliminated if a planned approach to tank maintenance is adopted. So, you know, really, I mean, again, trying to look at the big picture, that's one of the things that we really tried to look at there. And not only that, but we also want to make sure that, again, we're providing good, safe, quality drinking water so that we don't have any type of issues with the water quality. And small outlays of maintenance can substantially delay or eliminate the need to replace some of the utility's largest capital investments. I tell people that when we start to look at replacement cost of doing any one of these tanks, if you look at that 3-million-gallon tank, the 1-million-gallon tank, any of the standpipes that you have there, if you looked for a replacement value, it's going to cost you, a 1-million-gallon tank nowadays can cost close to $2 million to replace it. So when we start looking at the value of those assets that you have that are standing out there, a lot of times they're the single most expensive piece of equipment that a city owns. So obviously we want to make sure that we maintain them proactively. So if we're going to do that, we have two ways that we can maintain our assets. We can do this old fragmented, the classic business model where you and your tank, and you have all these people stand in the middle there. You got the people that make the paint, the people that put the paint on, you have the inspection, you may have an engineer that wrote a specification, but you have all these different people that are involved in that process. And if everything goes well, everybody's happy. If it doesn't go well, this is what you end up happening. Everybody stands at the bottom of the tank and they're all pointing at each other going, well, it's bad paint. No, you didn't put it on right. Nobody wants to accept responsibility. So the beauty of this type of business model is that you have you and your tank, we stand in between it. It doesn't matter what happens to it. If the paint fails early, if there's a repair, if somebody spray paints their name on the side of it, if anything were to happen to the tank once we sign a contract, we're wholly responsible for it. So when we come up to inspect the tank, when we come up to paint the tank, when we come up to repair the tank, we're doing it like we own the tank. Obviously, the city continues to own the tank, but we have a vested interest to make sure that the repairs are done right, that the paint is done right, that you don't have emergencies, that you don't have problems. And if we can align our interest with the city's, then it's a win-win relationship. What we've done, the utility service being the size that we are, we take all these different people, all the way from different engineers to painters to consultants to welders to project managers. We have all these people on staff. And when you need somebody to come over and weld on the tank, we send one of our welders over. When you don't need them, we send them to another tank to go do work on. If you tried to have all these people within in-house, within the city, it'd be very, very expensive. But really what we're trying to do is we're trying to gather all the different aspects of maintaining these assets, put it under one umbrella. You have one fee that you pay each year, and if anything happens to it, you have no risk or responsibility. All you have to do is either give us a call John, call myself, call our office, and say, hey, we have a problem on one of the tanks, and all of a sudden, boom, it becomes our problem. We're going to be here within 24 hours to get it taken care of. But it just, what it does is it really makes it a turnkey process. It just streamlines the whole process of maintaining those assets. So we talked a lot about obviously looking at the condition of the tank and what needs to physically happen to be able to bring these tanks up to par. But now that when we start to maintain an asset, we also have to look at just other than just the physical assets, we have to look at the information too. We need to make sure that we manage that. So what we did is in our website, we give you a password. You go into our website, you put in the password, and you have a 360-degree view of each one of the tanks. It'll have every inspection that's been done, when we're going to do the clean out next, when we're going to paint the tank next. Anything that will need to happen, all the way from the financial information to the actual physical work that will need to happen. The other thing that's very nice about this type of information is that when the state comes in to do a sanitary survey and audit the system, you can go in and punch this passcode in and you have a 360-degree view of the tank. So this just shows you a couple of just little screenshots of what that site looks like. We want to make sure that we inspect tanks on a regular basis. Luckily, none of these are your tank. So, but this is what we find in tanks that have not been inspected on a regular basis. We'll find holes in top of tanks. We'll see birds in the tank. We'll see bats in the tank. So, you know, what happens is we get this cold weather out here, and all of a sudden if those vent screens do get ripped out due to the cold weather, and what will end up happening is these birds a lot of times will try to find their way inside of a warm area, which typically could be a tank up on top. We have to make sure that we paint tanks on a proactive basis. If we don't do that, then what we start to see is significant corrosion on the outside or inside of a tank. And again, once we do that, have that steel loss, we can't go back and we can't get it back. So we want to make sure that we're doing it proactively. So we inspect the tanks on a regular basis. We paint the tanks whenever they need to be painted. We repair them when they need to be repaired. And if we can do that, then again, we're really protecting those assets. So, a contract. Our contract is a simple contract. It's yearly renewable. Each tank has a separate contract. So if down the road you added another tank, it's very easy to modify the contract. We just have a new contract for that new tank. It's a one-year contract, which can be extended indefinitely. You have complete control on whether you stay in or get out of the program. We can never drop you. So we can't sign a contract if you get 5 years into it, have your fees already set, and go, you know what, diesel's really went up, insurance is bad, we don't want to do, we cannot get out of the contract. You guys have control on whether you stay in or get out of this thing. The only way that we could ever drop you as a customer is if you quit paying us. So payments can be set up into your budget, either monthly, quarterly, semi-annual, or annual. fees will be locked for 3-year increments. So what you're seeing right now and what you've seen is that, I think, John, when he initially built this, what we did is we took the cost of doing all the renovations on the tank and you spread it over 6 years. So your fees are going to remain constant for the first 6 years, and then in year 7, it goes in, it's adjusted, and then it is locked. And so once it gets to year 7, then it's locked for another 3 years. So you're looking at 7, 8, 9 with no adjustment. So you have 9 years worth of pricing in front of you. At the end of the 3-year term, we have to have an adjustment period. But we want to make sure that you know that, hey, we're not going to all of a sudden double the prices. It is capped at a 5% annual adjustment and then locks for another 3-year term. Obviously, the reason we have those adjustments is because our prices get adjusted too, and we have to be able to pass that along so that we don't lose money. So, but we want you to have predictable costs so you know exactly what it's going to cost to maintain those assets. And the contract can extend indefinitely, and really that's what we're looking for. We have maintenance programs. Again, the very first maintenance program we ever signed is still in effect today. It's been in effect for going on about 28 years now. This is the 28th or 29th year that program's been in place. They've been through 3 different renovation cycles. And so we have, again, thousands of customers that are at different stages throughout that program. But the only way that this thing makes sense for us is if we can do it long term, and that's the way we try to get it. So what are the benefits of going with this type of program? Well, you have single source of responsibility. Like I say, if anything happens to it, it's our responsibility. So you're taking that risk of whether a coating system's going to last, whether repairs going to hold, if somebody's going to spray paint, God forbid somebody were to sight in their deer rifle on it, anything, no matter what's going to happen, we're going to carry the risk. And so if anything happens to it, we're going to come and take care of it. And the best thing is that at your next council meeting, there's no bill to approve. It's all included in the program. We have balanced funding. We spread your cost. Equity builds towards future renovations. We keep you in compliance with regulatory, with the state, with OSHA, with American Water Works, so that you have the peace of mind of knowing that no matter if OSHA came in and did an inspection, if the state comes in and does an inspection, everything is up to date. Everything is taken care of. You have annual inspections, biannual washouts. We give you emergency service. So, again, if anything were to happen to it, we'll come take care of it. Indefinite warranties, no surprises. This is always a nice thing on a public works project, no change orders. You know exactly what it's going to cost you. You don't have to worry about us coming back and saying, you know what, we missed something. If we missed something, that's our responsibility. We shouldn't have missed it. So we're not going to come back and ask you for more money, and we can't. We give you NACE inspection on all renovations, and NACE stands for National Association of Corrosive Engineers. We send every one of our inspectors through school to know exactly how to inspect a coating system, how they apply it, how they do surface prep, how they do finish coats, and the reason that we do that is because, again, we have a lot of risk in these coating systems lasting. So we want to make sure that our guys are educated that are going to be doing the inspections. And again, GASB 34 compliance modified approach. When you really start looking at this asset management program, I always tell people there's something in it for everybody. From an operational point of view, what's nice about this is that they know that everything that needs to happen to the tank is happening. But the best part is they also know if something happens to the tank that's not supposed to happen to it, they don't have to figure out how they're going to get everything taken care of. They're going to receive phone calls and say, somebody spray painted on the side of the tank. They're going to pick up the phone. They're going to call us. We're going to come and take care of it. Doesn't matter if it's Christmas, doesn't matter if it's Easter, doesn't matter if it's tomorrow. Whenever that would happen, we would be out here and we'd get it taken care of. From a budgetary standpoint, it's very nice because you have fixed expenses. Instead of having no cost, a dramatic cost that is hard to get set into the budget, what we do is once we get past this initial 6 years of these renovations to get everything brought up to par, then it goes to a base fee. And then you can shift from these capital expenditure projects to hopefully being able to get them into where they're an operating expense, and you can have your rates set to reflect what does it really cost for you to run that water system. So you have fixed expenses, you know exactly what it's going to cost you, and as I said, there's no change orders. So if you don't have to hold any money back in case all of a sudden the project ends up costing more than what you thought. And typically what council members like about this is that peace of mind, that reassignment of risk. For us to be able to take that off of the city's shoulders and put it onto ours and say, this is your cost. It's a fixed expense. If it costs more than that, you don't have to worry about it. that's just one less thing that you guys are going to have to worry about. You're still going to have plenty of things to worry about, but these assets that, again, are very, very valuable are going to be protected. So the schedule of what we're looking at is that we have three tanks here, and we're going to come up on a 3 million gallon Lions Park tank, and we're going to do a complete interior and exterior renovation in the first year. Get all the repairs. We're going to make sure, again, that you're in compliance with the state of Washington, OSHA, and American Water Works Association. In year two, we're going to do the 1 million gallon Lions Park tank. We didn't figure you'd want to take them both offline, so you can operate off of the other one while we're doing one. But in year two, we do that same thing, and again, brought that up, get that brought up to par for the 1 million gallon Lions Park tank. And then, because again, this is your newer tank, and again, through the assessment we did, through the inspections, we determined that in year four, that's when we would do the interior-exterior renovation on the red and white tank. As John said, one of the things that we have a little bit different on that red and white tank is you have the red paint on there. It looks great, but with that clear coat, we'll have some additional steps that we'll have to take even though we're not sandblasting it. So we're going to keep an eye on the red and white tank because we're not planning on doing a renovation on it until year four. But let's say we go ahead and we put all three tanks into the maintenance program and we get in here and we start doing our inspections and we get in here to year two and we do a washout inspection or an ROV inspection and we get in there and all of a sudden we start to notice that we have significant corrosion going on below the water line. Or all of a sudden on the outside, we're starting to lose adhesion when we do those inspections. Well, we're going to continually assess these tanks along the way. The one thing you can count on is you know exactly what it's going to cost you. But if all of a sudden along the way here, we start to notice before year four that we need to paint the outside of the tank or sandblast and paint the inside of the tank, we're going to talk to Terry and say, hey, we have problems, and if we let this go much longer, it's going to change the scope of the project. So we don't want to do that. Or we're losing steel on the inside of the tank. We don't want to do that. So this is a tentative schedule, and I can guarantee you this is when this tank will get painted and this one. But again, when we start to throw these things out in year four, we may have to pull it forward a little bit. But again, through the assessment we've done, we feel pretty comfortable with this schedule. So this is the plan. This is what we're going to manage to. But again, doing these inspections, we always kind of talk about when we're going to do the painting, and that's always very important because that's the majority of the cost of doing this type of work. But the most important part of asset management are these green and these blue squares. They're doing the visual inspections. They're doing the washout inspections. These are the things that we're going to then, again, be able to identify and develop a plan because it's an ongoing deal. I mean, you've got millions of gallons of water going through these tanks every month, every year. And so a lot of things can happen. And then when they start to happen, they can happen quickly. The best part about this deal is that you're protected. So if you have any questions in regards to the asset management program, again, we've been talking with these guys for a long time about it. We wanted to introduce all this stuff to you and show kind of tell you what we've been talking with your guys about.
Terry, have you gotten a couple of names of communities that are doing this so we can contact them and see? Okay, let's make sure we get a couple of names that we can bring back, some testimonies or whatever, back to the council to look at. Anything else council can think of? I mean, you're right, this is our largest investment in the community. There's no doubt about that. So I know we are interested in this, and we'll be talking about it, but nothing from the council then? Okay. I know Terry will be bringing this to us at our next meeting, I'm sure, and discussing it some more. Thank you very much then for filling us in on this. It's an interesting concept. Actually, it's a good concept. I know that. So.
Well, thank you
very much for coming down.
Appreciate your time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, we're going to jump 4.6, resolution declare well number 8 as an emergency. Terry.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Tonight we will talk a little bit about well 8 here. We're going to ask Council to, here towards the end, to declare repairs on well 8 an emergency. back on September 24th, we lost well 8. We found it, we had a broken line of ferrule feeding a clay valve that controls head pressure, and we lost that head pressure. And in the process, we sucked some air, we sucked some water, broke a coupler on the shaft, at about 625-foot level, and upthrusted the shaft, broke the ratchet off the top, the motor, did some damage to the rotor and the motor, took the cover off top of the motor, and we galled up some bearings on the bowls down below. In the process, we knew that we couldn't sustain everything with what we had, so we needed to turn around and pull this well, find out what was wrong with it, and try and turn it around, put it back in the hole to sustain production for the factories and the people in the city. So we had Snyder come out and equipment and pull that. I talked to the mayor about it, and I think he's contacted council, the council members on it. The estimate that I've got so far from Snyder on well 8 is a little over $62,000 for the repair of well 8. We're checking into right now is our insurance to see if we if this is covered under the insurance program that we have on these wells, and we'll be talking with them here real closely here within the next 10 days to see if we can get some coverage on this and kind of take the burden off of city funds here. So tonight I'd like to ask council to declare well 8 repairs as an emergency.
I carry it shared. We're right in the middle of the heavy sewage right now. All the manufacturers, all the growers and everybody are coming together right now, bringing potatoes in, processing, things like that. So I gave Catherine a call to verify we could get moving on this right away to get things going. So I told Terry to jump on it, let's roll. And they got right out here, which was really nice. Snyder did, and they got right in and find out what the problem was. So any questions for Terry? Okay, do I hear a motion to declare the repairs on well number 8 an emergency?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Gina first, Mark Snyder second. Or any further questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Terry, go home. Okay. Request use of park pool for the 2014 Mid-Valley Swim League Championship. That is Molly.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. At the Council workshop on October 7th, Council viewed an informational presentation about the Mid-Valley Swim League Championship meet by Dulcie Field, the meet director and representative of the Othello Barracuda swim team. In summary, this championship meet is a three-day meet that brings over 600 swimmers and their families to the selected Mid-Valley Swim League host team's facility each year. As a member team of the Mid-Valley Swim League and annual contracted users of the Othello Community Pool, the Othello Barracudas would like to bring this event to Othello and host the 2014 Mid-Valley Swim League Championship Swim Meet at the Othello Community Pool. So with this, representatives of the Barracuda swim team would like to request use of the Othello Community Pool and the Lions Park for this event, which is scheduled to take place July 25th through 27th, 2014. Though this championship meet was previously included in the city's contract with the Barracudas, we did want to come to council to request the use of the full park in order to increase the facilities available to the swimmers and their families throughout the 3 days of the event. So with that, the Public Works Department will facilitate the lifeguard staffing and concession staffing at the pool throughout this event. And with council's approval, we would then enter into a facility use agreement, and the Barracudas would supply us with an insurance agreement for use of the park and the pool facilities. So if council has any questions, I'm happy to answer those. If not, we would like to request use of the pool and Lions Park for the Mid-Valley Swim League Championships in 2014.
Is there some other is there another organization be doing something that weekend, like Little League or somebody?
I believe that's Relay for Life weekend. Is that correct?
If I remember right.
Oh, it was moved to June, so no, that's not.
Okay. It seemed like to me that it was mentioned that there were a couple of three things that could happen that same weekend. How much of a strain would, if you had another event, how much of a strain would that put on the crew?
Other than that event, I don't know. We don't have any tentative tournament scheduled or anything that we can plan around. If that's something, you know, obviously whatever council agrees upon, we'll have a precedence system, I guess, and, you know, whatever we can provide staffing to, we will, but we're only capable of doing so many, but at this time, we don't have anything scheduled for that weekend for Public Works that I know of.
Do I hear a motion to approve Resolution 2013-22 authorizing use of city property for the 2014 Mid-Valley Swim League Championships?
I'll make that motion.
Jean first.
Second.
Charles seconded. Any further questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same? Okay, and that passes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Adams County Development Council Addendum Number 6.
Got me in a council meeting.
Oh.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Bye bye.
Thank you, Mayor. The City of Othello entered into an agreement with Adams County Development Council in 2008. There have been addendums presented to the City Council to extend the original agreement for each additional year. The contract terms are the end of June through July. An invoice was submitted to the City in February and paid by the City. That amount was based upon the 50 cents per capita using the population figure of 7,364. In order to complete the renewal process, we are presenting you addendum number 6 to extend the original agreement for an additional year to June 30th, 2014. We had already appropriated in the 2013 budget $3,748. Staff recommends that the City Council approve addendum number 6 with the Adams County Economic Council. Do you have any questions about that?
Questions? Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the addendum number 6 with the Adams County Economic Council?
So moved.
Charles first. Taylor seconded. Any further questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, and that passes. Thank you, Debbie. Okay. Contract for city postage machine. Spencer?
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. This is a picture of the mail, the postage machine that we have in our workroom right now. We're meeting with the company Mail, called Mail Finance, and they're the company that provides all these, they're called Mail Post Machines. And this is a machine that we run all our utility bills, any postage that comes out from the city, we run through this machine. When we were meeting with them, they said that for the volume of mail that we produce, we really don't need this machine here. And they're suggesting the next picture here is the machine looks, So they're suggesting that we use this other machine. It just is just not built for the high volume that the machine that we have now produces. But they assured us that it would still meet the needs of the city. And so tonight before you is we're proposing that we move to this lesser machine that will save about $300 a year, and the staff recommends that council approve us in contracting for this new post machine.
Okay, move to hear a motion to move to accept the annual lease agreement with Mail Finance.
I'll make that motion.
Second. Further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Thank you, Spencer. Okay. 4.5, ordinance amending OMC 4.28 titled Cabaret and Adult Entertainment. Catherine.
At the mayor's request, we reviewed your current adult entertainment ordinance and found that that there were a few areas that could be added to strengthen and broaden the coverage. So the proposed ordinance before you tonight incorporates those additional uses. Mainly they are adult theaters of various different types as defined in the proposed ordinance. And then there was an addition to the beginning of the ordinance that essentially incorporates your legislative history that justifies the adoption of the ordinance in the first place, which is really critical to have that on the record, if you will, to be available in the event someone were ever to challenge your ordinance. It's essentially what the courts have required as a means of justifying the action taken by the council. So that's the reason for the several pages of legislative record. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, although this is not exactly a subject matter that I am intimately familiar with.
Questions? I know it's a long document.
It is.
But we need to protect the city from this kind of businesses. So.
And the definitions are not, they are terms of art in the industry. So they're not definitions that we create. We've taken them from the industry itself.
I got one small correction here. I think I know we're changing this from the clerk's hands over to the building department, and if you look under 428.40, second one there on the application, I think we missed one clerk should be added to that. Fourth sentence down on that. I know the 3.2 basically says the same thing, and we did change in that particular one to the planners, and I think that's what we should have changed to.
I'll take a look at that. The council in adopting this ordinance needs to be clear about which staff person is in charge of accepting the applications, reviewing the applications, and which staff person is in charge of issuing the license. If you want that authority to be transferred to the planner, then it should be consistent throughout the ordinance. If you want the clerk to retain the authority to actually issue the license and have the planner do the review and approval and recommendation of the application, then we can reflect that in the ordinance. It's simply up to the council.
Is everybody comfortable with just having the city planner be the person involved in it? So do we need to have you bring it back again with the change that we noticed, or?
No, you can adopt it with that change referenced.
Okay, so do I hear a motion to adopt ordinance number 1382, amending chapter 4.28, entitled Cabarets and Adult Entertainment, with the change on what was that, 4.28? .040 to read from
number two.
Okay, to be changed to the city planner. So I do hear a motion. Okay, Ken Taylor first.
I'll second.
Charles seconded. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay, then that passes. Thank you very much. Okay, 4.7, resolution to surplus food from pool concessions and sell to Othello School District. Molly?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Following, or you might remember back on September 23rd, I came to Council to request the donation of various leftover concession items from the 2013 season at the Othello Community Pool to donate to the Othello Food Bank. So this is, in part with that, I'd reference that we would be selling some of those items also to the Othello School District because they are able to sell those within their cafeteria or their school store. And so with that, following the closure, we were left with some candy items that the school district is able to resell. And because we had them left over, we kept them in the fridge. They're not perishable items, at least at this time. Their expiration date does extend them and does make them available to be sold within the next 8 months. So with that, you'll see a list on the resolution of the leftover items from the concession stand at the pool. And what staff is requesting is for the council to approve the surplusing of these items and then subsequently the sale of them to the Othello School District for us to receive about $86-ish dollars for those candy items.
Question? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve resolution 2013.21 declaring that 2013 Othello Community Pool season excess concession items as surplus and approve the subsequent sale of items, said items to be Othello School District. Do I hear a motion? Sam Johnson first, Eugene seconded. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, and that passes. Resolution to surplus food from pool concessions and donate to Othello Food Bank. Molly again.
I mentioned that previously I had come to council on September 23rd to ask for the approval of donations, the donation of the items listed on the resolution to the Othello Food Bank. It came to staff's attention that the approval of this item didn't include the resolution necessary to conduct such an action, having council approve the surplusing and then the sale of, and then the donation of those items. So with this, we would just want to correct that motion, and we just ask that council approve the surplusing of the items listed on the resolution 2013-20, and then the approve the donation of those items to the Othello Food Bank.
Question? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve resolution 2013-20, declaring the 2013 Othello Community Pool season excess concession items as surplus and approve the subsequent donation as said items to be the Othello Food Bank.
Make that motion.
Okay, Gina first, Dan seconded. Any further discussion, if there is any? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? That passes also.
Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. Okay, resolution accept donation for shop with a cop. Spencer.
Thank you very much, Council Mayor. Last week, the city received a $100 donation from Harvest Fresh Produce for the city shop with a cop program, and staff recommends that council accept this donation.
I hear a motion to accept the donations.
Make that motion.
Okay, Mark Snyder first, Gina seconded, and Gina beat you already, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? And that passes, thank you very much. Okay, 4.10, lobbyist discussion. Last meeting we had two lobbyists here that talked with us. So now the question is, what does the council want to do, if they want to do anything? Any thoughts, comments?
I think this is still a person that we need to look at in getting here. It's going to be another source of revenues that I believe that we could go after. But us as a council can't do it. We're going to have somebody else to do it. After listening to both of them, I still kind of favor Scott Cave. Scott's very familiar with this area. He's grown up in this area. He's worked with the city in the past. He's also worked with the city engineer. He's familiar with them. They've worked with him, I believe, in Quincy. on projects that they've got money on over there. We have had a price correction since Scott came the first time and he corrected it, but he will work within a budget that the council sets, and we will work within that. And I believe a council does need to set a budget for him to work with him. But whoever we do get, we need to get going soon, because they got a lot of groundwork that they need to do before the legislation goes into session first part of next year.
My concerns is everybody lost that same fund for the streets that we've been talking about that we need. They said themselves that it's gone. There's no tapping into it. So it's not just our city. We got a bunch of cities now that's going to be fighting and scrapping. And everybody, every city's got streets to repair. They're in the same boat that we are. My concern is return on investment. Is it going to behoove us to invest, you know? And granted, he did come back with a lower rate. Even at that rate, you know, is it worth it? Plain and simple. Is it worth it? I'm not convinced of it yet. I don't know. That's still a lot of money. You know, I'd maybe like to see a little bit more money put into explaining this 0.2% and trying to, you know, educate why that needs to be done and educate the amount of funds that we have lost and the difficulties we're having now balancing our own budget than, you know, this type of money directed out.
Said everything I was going to say, and I agree. I you know, okay, you can say okay, we got to have somebody there to get our face in front of the rest of the legislature, but we sat here and heard both of them say that it's probably not going to happen. They're not going to refund the thing. So what are you going to do? You're going to put $30,000 or $12,000, whatever it is, and what are you going to get back in 6 months from now? Anything? It's kind of like maybe you ought to play some kind of a game like a salesman. You know, you get a basic salary of $500 a month, and then we'll pay you X if you bring something into the city or whatever. I don't like the fact that we're facing a tight budget of our own, and then we're going to spend more money on the off chance, the crapshoot, that we might get something back for it. So in 6 months, nothing comes by, then we're going to say another, well, if we do it again next year, well, maybe we'll get something. So now we got, what, $12,000 or $24,000 invested in us, and I just don't like the whole situation at this point in time, given our own budget. And I agree, we need to be more proactive with this 0.2% thing than what we're doing. So that's where I stand.
Well, I don't know whether this is the right time or not to hire somebody, but it gets to the point, you know, you can sit there, well, we should have done this, we should have done that, the legislature should have done this, they should have done that. We didn't get any money. AWC, they've got lobbyists that can go in there and talk and do things for the general cities in the state of Washington. But they cannot do it for an individual city. They're not set up that way, and they're offered legally, they cannot do that. You need a lobbyist for your own to do some of this. I think our problems are a little bigger than just our public works fund. We've got some issues setting out here. One of these days, we're going to fight us, we're going to fight us really hard. told and start pushing some of these issues, the only way you're gonna get a push is a squeak of the wheel, it's hard to get it to go electric. I've been there, I know what it's all about, and I know how it operates. And you don't do it, the time legislature comes in and they have your session, you're 6 months late. You should have been in there at the committee meetings. You should be presenting your problems and your issues at that time. Technically, we're too late for 2014 right now. You might have a couple committees left, but you should be working on that stuff in April and May in the early part of the year to get into this to happen. Actually, their next budget cycle, I mean, there'll be a little bit of change in 2014, but in 2015, you'll have a biannual cycle coming out again, and that's when you really need to hit solutions on what you've got. If public works fund, everybody says, well, it's dead, it's defunct. I don't believe that. There are too many people in too many cities that complain about what happened. And I think they're gonna make some changes, or they're gonna make a whole lot of changes as far as legislation. You're gonna see a lot of new faces coming, and you hope they don't make some changes to help out some of the cities. Because everybody depended on that money. And it didn't happen, and they've gotta make some changes to help out some of the government. They've gotta make some changes to make some things happen. And, sure, it's a lot of money to spend on somebody to go in there and talk to people. And Tim's been there, I've been there, and we do a lot of legwork, talking to different legislatures on different items and different things. I don't ask for any money to do it, I just do it for the good of the city or other entities that I'm involved with. But to get somebody to really listen to you and get your word across, you gotta stick your nose right in their face all the time. You can't just be in one door, knock out the next one. It don't work that way. You're talking to legislators, you're not talking to normal people. I don't know what the solution is. I think that we do need somebody to help us out on some of these issues. We've got a water issue in this town. One of the days we're gonna fight it through the heart. We're gonna run out of water in some of these wells. What are we gonna do about it? We've got a possible solution for it. But unless we keep pushing it and push legislation, we're going to have a problem. And we've already got the door open by this, study and whatnot that we're doing right now. It's gonna happen in the next 16 months. And we're gonna need some help and a voice in the winter for that. We're probably in Washington, D.C. before we get through it. But there's an out, there's a way to make these things work. You've got to stay in there and keep fighting. You can't just say, well, next year, or don't do anything about it. Quincy's got two people working for them over there. That's why they're making progress over there. We got a railroad setting right here in LaBelle. It's defunct. Here in Royal City, we've got a couple of them that are working very hard to open that railroad up. Does anybody think about it? Do they care? There's some people that do think about it, and this business will develop. And if you don't have somebody over there, keep pushing and knocking on the door, because that technically comes under the Department of Transportation. Railroads are all under the Department of Transportation. If we can open this little railroad back up again, which used to be there, we're gonna have more business come through town and through the belt. And there's other things that we need to use with our railroads to tie Adams County back in to the railroad system. We're almost out of the business. That's what created this town. That's what made this town. But nobody seems to care. Put it all on the highway. But there's a lot of our freight that still be on the railroad and tie it in. We've got, what, four separate railroads in Adams County, which is kind of unique.
We are one of the only counties in the state that has four major railroads coming through.
We you could tie that together. These trains are running back and forth across the country. Don't really mean too much to us, because we got one car, two cars, three cars here. I want to pick those up and tie them into a main line. Those big railroads, they don't want that. They want a unit train to go through. They don't care about that one or two or three little cars. But what they're trying to do is set this all together so you can get these cars, get your commodity to market. And Scott is on this. That boss is on this. Two of the others are working on this. Because, I mean, this is a small thing here, what, 16 miles, 18 miles, whatever that is. And it's something we don't even think about. And it's one of the issues that's going to come up, and it's not, we need some help. Is anybody out here in the crowd going to go to Olympia and fight for us? Is anybody going to sit there for day in and day out trying to make the issue free? You've got to have a person like Scott or Jennifer or whoever you're going to hire to sit there and talk to you.
And there is a lot of special monies, and that's what we're looking at going after. The only thing I could say is if the council wishes not to look at the lobbyists right now, I really encourage them in February to go to the AWC Legislative Conference that's held over there and attend that for a couple days. And then you get a good sight at seeing what's going on. Gives you a good chance to talk to some of the representatives over there. But it gives you kind of a good on-site of kind of where me and Ken are coming from, too, and how much more help that we need as a city to make ourselves a spotlight with the state and all the legislators, not just our local, but statewide.
Yeah, I'm for this also myself. Ken was talking about the railroad. Evergreen Implement uses the road a lot. So a lot of our tractors come into Bruce, and we have to drive them from there the store, but it'd sure be nice that you dropped off closer, you know. But that's something we have to do as a business. So, you know, it is a very economical way of shipping stuff across the nation, because our stuff comes out of Moline, a lot of it, and combines and things like that come in that way. So, you know, that's a very important thing. But there, you know, visiting with the AWC people and stuff, when we went down there a couple weeks ago, there's going to be money available. Don't know how much. It's going to come in a different form, it looks like, than what we're used to seeing. It'll have a different name on it, and there's going to be competition for it. You know, there's going to be some hard competition for getting those monies. But if you're sitting in the right place, I mean, an example was we were accepted to do the water and sewer over there. The reason we got that, a lot of reason is because it was for economic reasons. Another industrial area. They like funding those type of things. You know, 14th Avenue, that was accepted until we lost it in the second round, whatever it was. You know, they like that because of all the schools and the safety issues. So we have some projects, and like water and other issues, railroad, things like that, that will score pretty good when we're pursuing those. They'll look good in the competition rounds when we're trying to get in there and get those. And we have to be progressive about it. You know, we can't sit back. It's not going to come to us. That's just the reality. We heard that from our state representatives that were here. So we should look at doing something. We can limit the amount of money to where we want and see what they can do for us. But, you know, I think to keep our community growing and staying healthy, we need to take a few risks and see what happens. I mean, Quincy did it. We've seen what they've done. Other communities are doing it. Cheney's now jumped in and doing it. I don't know how big they are because the universities are big, but otherwise, I doubt they're any bigger than we are. So, but we really need to take a hard look at what we think we can do and try to put something out there to keep our name in front of everybody all the time. Other comments or thoughts?
Well, I basically agree with both of you, both sides. From what we heard from AWC, they recommend us having our own lobbyist. It's one of the few ways that we're going to be bringing money into the city right now, either through grants and or direct appropriations. But the financial part of it kind of makes me balk a little. I would be more comfortable with it if there was some kind of, you know, flat rate to begin with, and then as he starts bringing in the money to the city, that we could start paying him more. I don't know how to solve that. One of the other ways is we could just, you know, have one project at a time for the time being and limit it. But like I said, the financial issues, it makes me raise my eyebrows and it makes me balk a little bit, but I do understand that we do need a lobbyist. You know, if we don't have a lobbyist, the other cities that do have them, they're the ones that are gonna get the money. And right now, there's just not a lot of it out there.
I tend to agree with Gina as far as, yeah, we do need a lobbyist. But then I do agree with Dan and Eugene, can we afford a lobbyist right now? What Ken Kaler said was, is that we've kind of missed the boat for this year, right? So to say?
Well,
we're late.
We're late. We're at the tail end.
So why don't we find a happy medium where we regroup, try and budget it in for the upcoming year, and kind of take baby steps through it versus having to jump right into it and make the big commitment and put us into a little financial issue.
And basically what I understand is that at this point, the decisions over there have already been made. They were made in the committees before they ever go into session. And so we've kind of missed the boat this year. So it makes more sense to look at it and possibly try to get in on next year when we could get in early enough that you could be talking to him during these committee, as opposed to talking to him after the decision's already been made, which really is going to be in one ear and out the other.
Those front runners are already there for this year. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to feel that we're going to walk in, no matter how good either one of those two lobbyists are, and be the recipient. But I think for future, we could, like I said, we could budget it in a little bit more and squeeze and save and scrape here and there to where it's not such a big gouge.
And by no means, I am not saying that we don't need to have our face there. But is it the right time right now? No, I don't think it is.
Ken brought up the whole situation that anything we've talked about so far is roads and 14th or whatever. It seems to me we need some kind of an agenda that says these are the things that are important to us and this is what we want you to work on. And whether we're paying him $5 an hour or $100 an hour, you know, he needs to be spending some time, you know, on issues that are generic to us, like the railroad, or like the water, or what else. There's other things going on around here that we need help with too. So we probably need to sit down and run up a little agenda there, you know, to present to whoever we hire that, you know, and maybe we need to prioritize that, you know, okay, spend more time on this one, but stick your nose for that one. It's not that I don't think we need somebody, yeah, but I don't like the idea of putting a big chunk of money into it right off the bat.
And I believe our immediate needs are known on that side.
Yeah.
You know, the 14th Avenue, so we'd be looking at future projects and problems, I guess, coming up and focusing on that versus what they already know.
Maybe we need a little bit of time to have a committee to do some of this, to give them the scope of what we want them to do and line it out for them so they don't just go there and run wild and all on their time. Because you gotta, I don't care what lobbyist it is, you gotta control them too. I mean, they can go over there and run up a bill, you know, say, well, I had to do this, I had to do that. No, you have to do this, this, we set up a committee, your legislative group, whatever we got here, accountable too. So if they've got a problem or a question, we now have to come to the council meeting over every time and say, that's 2 weeks down the road, it may be too late. But if we've got an agenda, like you said, an agenda set up ahead of time, let them know what we want and what we expect from them. And then keep them in control of what we want to do.
So would council be favorable waiting till the first of the year? That's right in the middle of the budget process?
And take a look at it to try to work it in next year.
Yeah, I do think we try and work it into the budget.
This one, go then, we'll do a motion on it then, unless somebody wants to make a motion. No motion? Okay. All right, next on the agenda is unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business?
He's got 21 things to do on, he may be here all night.
Oh.